Hi, welcome to the Ecosystemic Futures Podcast, brought to you by ShoshinWorks in collaboration with NASA Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project. I'm your host, Ed Powell, CEO at TensorX, where we leverage the crowd and AI to drive system design, inform corporate strategy, and optimize operational performance. As our world is increasingly digital and interconnected, ecosystemic models are reshaping the fundamental frameworks within society, industry, economy, and policy, and reframing how we innovate and build for resilient futures. In this series brought to you by ShoshinWorks, in collaboration with NASA, we're exploring these new systemic models and the impacts they have on the future. In this episode, we continue our dive into quantum sensing, how it is being applied today, possibilities it holds along with potential pitfalls, and finally, the key ingredients to ensuring a positive framework as we move into the future. My co-host today is Gary Hunter. Gary is a senior electronics engineer at the NASA Glenn Research Center. Gary?
Hi, I'm Gary Hunter at NASA Glenn Research Center. I've spent over 30 years in the development of sensor technology and sensor systems, trying to implement and demonstrate new technologies in a range of applications. These applications have included launch vehicle leak detection, aircraft fire monitoring, putting a long-lived lander on the surface of Venus, and in the bio era, the development of home breath monitor system for asthma. I presently work in the Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Mapping activity, which is associated with this podcast.
With us for part two of this deep dive into quantum sensing is Jeff Buxbaum, a medical officer at the National Cancer Institute.
My name is Jeff Buxbaum. I am a physician scientist at the National Cancer Institute, which is one of the institutes at the NIH. And my primary responsibility there is broad in that I review grants and I manage grants. I help generate opportunity for our U.S. science and collaborations with various different agencies in the United States. My primary responsibility is with the DOE, but recently, as a member of the Quantum Working Group, I've been interacting with members of NSF as well. And along the way, I interact with Italian partners in a material science collaboration that's over a decade old. And in that context, a NASA futurist. So here I am, and I'm very pleased to be an invitee on your podcast. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. So as we consider broader issues arising from the application of quantum sensing, can you address specifically issues that would come up related to workforce demands or security and trust?
Sure. I foresee that like molecular biology, like digital computers, the issues of the technology will be there, but the issues of the workforce will be something that really is a challenge to us going forward. And that's because of many things from equity to trust to systemic racism, to all sorts of things. But be that as it may, the key part of quantum sensor workforce development is that to do it properly requires people to collaborate and to be exposed to things that they aren't necessarily exposed to earlier than they are currently today. I'm an unusual person, that I'm a physics person. I was a physics major, have a grad degree in physics, then a grad degree in biophysics, then an MD, and then some specialty training. So it was 13 years after college of training. Most people, you should not do that. That's just a lot of years not to have, like a normal life. To do the workforce properly, it's going to require three levels of approach. People like me that are old, and I mean old meaning, over 40, let's say, we have to be able to feel comfortable learning a new thing. And the most important thing you can ever take away from this conversation, in general, all these episodes, is that you always have to stay abreast of things, you always have to stay curious, and you always have to keep yourself learning. And that's going to keep you out of trouble, that's going to keep you successful. So it's very important that people are motivated and protected so they can learn new things, they can do new subjects, they can be exposed to new ways of thinking. That has to be a priority for our society. People can't be allowed to be put into silos and they get very good at something, but that something can all of a sudden become obsolete. The second thing is we have to be able to get people from other places on the planet, not just the United States, because this is such a demand and talent that we have to figure out how to get people to come to the United States and bring them in through our system. And that may require rethinking how we help people to the country, how they get green cards, how they get visas and such. That's going to have to, this kind of stuff is a national priority. We have to be able to be competitive in this space. And third, we need to rethink how we deal with teaching in school. And so the simple way of thinking would be, oh, just make them do more math and more physics. But fundamentally, these kinds of ways of thinking are about creativity. They're about philosophy. They're about rethinking the status quo. So we have to somehow be able to get people comfortable with all the technical stuff, but we also have to make sure that they have creativity. So that's just the workforce. So I think it's three-pronged. It's the established person. It's the primary bachelor, your college student, postdoc level, that range. And then there's the ninth grade to 12th grade student that really is our primary target for long-term thinking, because after quantum sensors will be something else. And we have to have a workforce that's able to deal with new problems together. They have to be willing to work together, collaborate, and communicate well. And they have to be humble in a sense that they have to be willing to accept the fact they don't know something, and this is where I go to get it. So that's my philosophy about workforce.
So security and trust.
Well, these things go to abuse of technology and ethics of scientific enterprise. And they go down to the focus of standards. And I go back to standards because standards and truth are, I think, existential realities for a proper scientific approach. And so the world has to be able to communicate in a common language with standards where if you say, this is the way it is, this is the way it is. And the issue with these kinds of technologies, for example, in quantum sensing, there's something called decoherence. And so if you get a quantum sensor very close to a surface and you're wanting to study that surface, let's say that surface is a hard disk, or that surface is the front edge of the wing of an airplane, or that surface is a neuron in a human's brain or a tumor cell, and I want to study exactly what's going on, I need to know that the person doing the data analysis is doing it in a way that I can reproduce it anywhere on the planet. Because if you can do something and you say it's this and I discovered this and nobody else can do it, it's worthless and it might be a critical discovery. So the key part of anything going on with this kind of technology, engineering, physics, biology, or the in reality, the combination of all the above, is trust. And the key part of trust is developing a framework for standards and a framework for communication so that I know if Gary does an experiment in, let's say, Chicago or Cleveland, and he sends me what he did, I can do the same thing in my place and get the same result. If I don't get the same result, he and I might have discovered something very important, or we might have discovered something's really wrong. But the bottom line is we both can be sure that we acted with integrity. And at that level, once you have that, you have trust. And with trust, you can move ahead and you can do science and you can move much more quickly. Science breaks down when you lack trust. Trust is based on truth. Trust is based on a standard set of behaviors and ethics. And inside of that comes all sorts of things.
So if I may narrow this down a little bit, you've discussed workforce, security, and trust. And if I may suggest, what you've described is broad. That is, we have workforce issues in terms of familiarity and comfort with technology. We have security issues in terms of it. If I may begin to ask you, can we talk a little bit about the specific challenges with respect to all three issues associated with quantum sensing in and of itself? If you don't mind, please.
Sure. I think that it's critical. I'm a physician scientist who has a physics background. And I was so excited when in our workshop on January 5th, we had a public workshop at NIH, the first one on quantum sensing that we've ever had. And one of the main themes, if not the main theme, was an absolute necessity to bring the community of the physicist and engineer, quantum scientist, if you will, into the biomedical scientist community and to bring the biomedical scientist community into the physics community. That was not meant to be a segue for this podcast title, Ecosystem, but it pretty much was. My take-home goal from that workshop and what I've been working on as a member of that working group at NIH is to make that happen, because I would love to see a long-term shift so that more of the physical scientists become versed in biology and conversant in the language of the biologists, and the biologist and the molecular biologist and the surgeon gets more comfortable with the material scientist, the quantum chemist, the engineer, and that will make our whole group, we will learn from each other. And that, to me, is the most important thing that could come about from quantum sensing. It's demanding in a way that I have not seen before in our society. Even AI hasn't demanded quite the same thing. It's demanding that these experts come together to move things and to make progress. And I think it's acting as a catalyst. The quantum sensor is in and of itself incredibly valuable to be able to study or diagnose somebody with a 10,000th the level of viral load that a standard sensor takes. Means you could detect COVID maybe early, you could detect cancer maybe early, you could image people's treatment outcomes or predict their outcomes much earlier based upon much more fine granular data. That stands by itself. But take that and put that into a box of the quantum sensor. What the quantum sensor's biggest value to our society may very well be is the demand that it places on people to talk to each other. And in so doing, it sets up a better future.
To add to that slightly, I would suggest that in multiple fields these days, the need to be multidisciplinary is almost mandatory. That you can't necessarily do purely one thing if you're going to have an impact. Sometimes you have to be able to span fields and span capabilities, bringing them together for something to indeed have an impact. And I'm sympathetic to your earlier description of yourself in a sense that back when I was an undergrad, I double majored in physics and philosophy with the idea that having a, well, I figured that'd be the only time in my life there was ever going to get a chance to study philosophy like that. And so that's what it was. The idea that one is multidisciplinary and the teams are multidisciplinary, I think, is mandatory, or at least a very highly recommended, as we get into more complex systems and more complex problems. So thank you very much for that. Thank you.
So as we think about quantum sensing, what sensors should we have to investigate and monitor the whole field of quantum sensing itself? How would we think about the leading indicators of where it's going and things to look out for?
I think that a couple critical things about quantum sensing are going to be the development of standards so that performance can be measured. I don't really know how stable a quantum sensor might be over time and through trauma, be it heat, be it vibration, be it just abuse. So there has to be a set of not just the sensors, but a whole set of infrastructure developed to monitor those sensors, as you say, the sensors. But we have to figure out the infrastructure to bring those sensors into and make them compatible with the existing state space. So we have a huge amount of things going on in the world. Let's just take the example of the world's really top-notch cardiologist, someone who cares a lot about his or her patients. They're well-trained. They know about echocardiograms and echocardiography. And this new quantum sensor comes up and it gives this gamish of data, this huge amount of data. What has to happen isn't just the engineers doing the quantum sensor, but someone has to figure out, working with ideally those cardiologists all over the world, how to take that data and make it useful to that doctor or that team or that AI or what. So there has to be a way to explain things. And you know, I have to say, Gary, I wasn't as brave as you were in college about philosophy. It's some of the coolest stuff. But you know, when you go to the supercomputing meetings, I always found myself leaning towards the data visualization awards hall. And you go down the hall and you look at how people present data and explain things. And I think that area of science, And you go all the way back to the map of Napoleon's attack in Russia, back that famous map. I forget the name of the person who did that, but it's this classic masterpiece of graphics explanation and data visualization. But that kind of skill set, so that the person who is not necessarily an expert in all the nuances can be approached, and his or her life experience can be brought into the system and be valued. And by that's about communication. So I think the sensors that you're talking about, how to make sure they're right, that's absolutely fair game. They have to be applied properly. They have to be explained properly. The data has to be stored in a robust fashion. That brings up so many different levels of discussion. I don't even, can you subvert quantum sensors is a whole topic of conversation I'm not expert enough to start on. But as you're an AI expert, you know all about how you can subvert an AI through subtle cues and things. So we don't even know where that could happen with, you know, magnetic noise and things like that. Over.
So what you mentioned, and by the way, back in the day, I remember going back to the place I used to work, and they asked about the philosophy degree and says, how are you going to get a job with that? And over time, I have joked that sometimes I use my philosophy degree in parallel with my physics degree, as we, for example, have to communicate some of the things we're trying to do. And that seems to be one of the statements that you've just made, that what not only is there an necessity to be able to have a quantum sensor that works, but you then need a sensing system to complement it. And then you need, in a sense, a data information system thereafter to both make the data available, but also make it understandable in a broader, I don't want to say use community, but that's the word that's coming out in my head at the moment, a broader spectrum of folks who might be implementing it and or using it or being affected by it. Is a fair summary of the framework of where quantum sensing might be heading?
Oh, I think absolutely. I thought about this kind of question on a recent bicycle ride, and I thought about what life was like before they discovered the microscope and that bacteria and microbes existed, and life after that. And these quantum sensors are going to be doing that sort of thing to the biomedical community, in the sense that we're going to see things on a scale that we haven't seen them at. We have models and we have sophistication, but we might see things we're not used to seeing, and we might have to rethink assumptions, which is always a good thing. And that causes, you know, that causes shifts, that causes, you know, step functions in terms of understanding, insights, and hypothesis generation. And so it's an exciting time. It's a scary time if you are invested in quote, the way it is, unquote. But I think it's a good thing. And I think these are opportunities for all sorts of people. Not everyone has to be a physicist or a biomedical engineer or an AI expert. They can be someone who's focused on application of this in an understandable fashion, in education, in communication skills. We have a lot of opportunities, and this is just a way of really energizing the scientific community. So I'm excited about quantum sensors because I think they're going to cause a revolution at multiple different levels at the same time. That's going to cause a serious change in how we interact with each other.
So I'll briefly comment, and if I can say this properly, when I was a kid, I was affected by Star Trek, as many were, perhaps, although I'm old enough that I remember the first generation. And I have viewed, as time has gone on, that effectively we might be in a little bit of a race towards realizing a world that's enabled by technology that addresses many of the needs and makes the world a better place. That race is versus the problems that we have gathering together and perhaps pulling us back. And I'm sorry, the one I think of offhand is Mad Max in the other direction. So where we've made the world a heck of a lot better place and where things haven't quite gotten to where we need them to be. And I think what I'm hearing you saying is that you're viewing quantum sensing to enable so many capabilities that we don't presently have and having an impact that we may really need as time goes on to help really make things better and move our world to perhaps a better place.
Yes, do believe that. I think, first of all, I think that when you actually study the Star Trek episodes, that the approaches they were trying to, the issues they were trying to address were pretty broad and grand, and I'm not sure it would fly in today's television world. I like those episodes too, but to go back to this conversation, the issue with information, the issue with technology, and all the things associated with AI, with quantum sensing, with they can be used good, can be used for not so good, and it's going to require active light shining on the process and on the opportunities and on the rule following. And so it's super important that places where those kinds of things are encouraged, where there's, you know, laws, the rule of law, fairness, equity, diversity, belonging, it's incredibly important. And I say that in a way that's not meant to sound preachy, because my very first patient as a medical student was a Nazi, and I happen to have a Jewish last name. So I had to figure out, that was a really opening kind of experience where I had to figure out how to care for somebody who hated my guts and would kill me, and he said so much. And eventually it worked, and I had the support of the boss, the, you know, the attending doctor and the resident. But as a med student, it was sort of entitlement. That's the ground floor. Those kinds of lessons where you have to bring people in that don't agree with your perspective, so you avoid the Mad Max world. And I'm of the opinion that the Mad Max world comes from people being selfish and from people not being kind and being, you know, it's, so what I try as hard as I can, and this goes to mentorship, and I think mentorship is something that's a whole other topic, but one of my favorite people in the world, a mentor, told me, mindfulness is the secret sauce of all this. So I sit back and I think about all this stuff, and I try really hard to live up to the expectations of these various mentors. And with quantum sensing, the most important thing we can do is explain it like we're doing on this podcast today, so that the audience today feels comfortable with it, is excited by it, and wants to communicate about it and learn about it. And that learning, that education, that is the Teflon that protects us from the Mad Max world. By getting more people to understand each other and more people understand the science and more people be willing to say, I don't understand that, could you help me? By breaking down those barriers that ignorance puts up for people, this podcast is a perfect example of one of these kinds of things that's super important. I think that's a good thing. And I think that's going to help us go to the Star Trek world, like you said, and not go to the Mad Max world. Quantum sensing is not going to go away. There are companies coming forth. There are approaches being used. There are medical decisions that are going to be made more accurate and more safe. And so we need to be able to deal with them. There are also going to be ways of studying how people think and studying how people interact with each other and how that makes them think. And anytime you have insight into how someone's thinking or feeling, or anything like that at that level, you might be able to misuse that. And so it's very important that the field stays robust in the sense that we shed light on things, we explain things, and we make things understandable to people as much as it's possible to do in a system. Obviously, there are going to be things that agencies have to do to keep us safe that they don't tell us about. But other than those kinds of things, I think it's important as scientists that we make everyone feel that this is approachable. And by doing that, we protect ourselves from the Mad Max world.
I hope I picked the right movie.
Those were good examples.
So as we wrap up this episode, it's clear that quantum sensing offers profound benefits and opportunities, with observations enabling innovation in almost every field. However, we must be mindful, because humans are involved, that we create frameworks for transparency, for inspectability, for trust, and those things that ultimately test those potential pitfalls. So once again, when only 62% of science articles' results can be reproduced and only 39% of those in the social sciences, we still have an epistemic problem of understanding truth and seeking truth even when it hurts. Gary?
Thank you very much, Ed. I very much enjoyed this conversation, Jeff. The whole idea of trying to make the world a better place And finding ways to do that has been, at least for myself, as I work for NASA, a motivating factor for a bit of time. And your description of how that might be has been quite helpful. And I thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Jeff. We've really enjoyed hearing your perspective on quantum sensing, specifically in helping us to understand the broader applications and implications. Make sure to check out the last podcast episode in which we continue the conversation with Dr. Jeff Buxbaum about the key ingredients essential in designing the quantum sensing framework for ecosystem wellness. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite place to access podcasts, and you can learn more at shoshinworks.com. We'll be right back.